So, Amanda, thanks for looking over my shoulder today as we analyze this bot and bring your perspective to if this bot's working well or not.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm going to do some clothes shopping. I'm on a brand bot. And I mean, there's just a ton of words. I'm not sure I'm even comfortable with that.
Yeah, we call that a wall of text. We try to steer clear of those. Obviously, with a platform and a paradigm like messaging, text is the dominant way to exchange information, but you don't want to rely too much on text.
And so now it's asking me women's or men's. So I'm beginning to go down a decision tree. Do you like that I'm going down that route?
I think if you're trying to get people in a shopping mindset, there's a reason why when you hit major retailer web pages, you're not asked questions up front. You're given inspiration. You're shown a lot of options. And I think that there's quite a bit of data to show that every decision you force people to take actually slows them down. It increases drop-off, increases the cognitive burden on users. So you want to make decisions and choices lightweight and use inspiration wherever you can to drive people's choices.
That's interesting. I would like to talk about how I could have actually ended up using this bot. I mean, I could just know the brand and have gone to their website and I was browsing and started up a chat, or I could have known enough to download a bot, or I could be here because I clicked on a link in an email. Will the bot know the difference?
Yeah, bots do have that capability. You can attach parameters to it and know where you're coming from. But I think the journey you're describing where you start over email and then all of a sudden you're landing in Messenger, you've got to introduce consumers to Messenger in a way that makes sense and not surprise them with it, and in a way that reduces the friction of it. So that first interaction, you could argue that offering a promotion is a pretty compelling thing to offer to get people in. But if that's the main thing they see when they arrive, my concern as a designer is you're kind of setting people up to expect deals over this channel, and it has potential to be way more than that. And when I approach a design challenge, I always try to be what I call messaging first. I try to think about what's different about messaging clients. There's this interactivity that's not present on the web. It's not present over email. There's the opportunity to learn about your user. And if you're just, you know, hooking them with a discount and they come in and you give them the discount, then it's really a lost opportunity.
That was Amanda Robinson giving me some insights into the shopping bot that I was just using. Amanda is a conversational marketing designer and strategist at Automat.ai, a company that helps brands deliver messaging experiences that are tailor-made for individuals. Amanda is an expert in conversational business, having gotten her start in the field in the late 90s, when she designed and built a speech recognition-based tutor that went on to receive millions in funding. Over the years since, she's worked as a solution engineer, product engineer for a variety of SaaS platforms. She's been trained as a voice interaction designer and been responsible for leading conversational business initiatives for a number of Fortune 500 companies. I am thrilled to have Amanda as my guest today as we dive into why brands are making the move to chatbots, what they need to do to get it right, and how you objectively determine whether your bot is working the way it should. I'm John Pryle. Welcome to the Impact Podcast.
Well, that was fun to go through that bot a little bit. Let's kind of elevate our discussion a little bit. Clearly, although we were talking about clothing and shopping, lots of consumer-facing brands are now launching messaging bots. So it is clothing and it is beauty and it's bookstores and it's banks and news feeds. Why do you see all this happening?
So chatbots in particular are the child of two macro trends. On one hand, we have the vast consumer adoption of messaging platforms that's happened over the past 2 years in particular. Now, the main messaging platforms have between 2 and 3 billion monthly active users, which is staggering if you think about it. And then there's also, on the other side, there's artificial intelligence, which is allowing for automation, because some of these platforms have opened up APIs that let you automate the interactions. And so the ability to power that with artificial intelligence opens up the possibilities for companies to converse with thousands of consumers at a time at scale.
But it's more than tech and kind of the opening of the door to these channels. Earlier, we were talking and you shared a bot metrics chart about over time how many people continue to go back to these bots, and they don't. Mm-hmm. So what is it that makes success so difficult?
Right now, there's a bit of a gold rush happening, and a lot of people are jumping in to try to, you know, experiment with the new paradigm. It's sort of analogous to the very early web pages you would see with the flashing text. And I think, as I said, we're in experimental mode. There's an emergence of best practices and people are figuring out what's possible with the new channel. But a lot of those early bots, even some that we're seeing launching these days, are pretty shallow adaptations of content and experiences that were designed for other channels.
It's interesting. And it almost doesn't make sense if you're going to experiment and you're going to experiment badly. If you're going to put the effort in to create something, we kind of need to think about what it would be to be a successful bot. And I think my guess is companies on the bad experiments will start with, okay, let me just talk to this user and force my idea to this user, as opposed to maybe aligning with business goals and thoughts. So what are you looking for when you're helping people and consulting with folks that are going to create bots? What are you getting them to think about in terms of what's most important?
Sure. So there's a couple of pillars that I come back to again and again. One of them is, it sounds trite, but thinking through a use case that's messaging first. So a use case that really leverages the interactivity, that respects the medium, which when we're talking about messaging, you're speaking in very short bursts. You might throw a few images in there, but it's a very lightweight back and forth experience. You're not pushing lots of content, information. You're not putting a lot of decisions and putting a burden on the user to narrow themselves down a funnel. You're wanting to learn about them and let it unfold.
So I got messaging first. So that's kind of the very first principle of what I'm designing for. What are my objectives beyond that now?
So the most successful bots generally, in respecting the back and forth, there's a macro back and forth too, which is you're building an experience that's got to achieve some business goals. Either you're trying to increase revenue, you're looking at customer lifetime value or consumer sentiment, you want to get brand awareness, whatever your specific goals are. But then you also have to think through what's in it for the user. And it's much more acute over messaging. You can see very quickly if you've misaligned either your use case or your execution with users' needs, you're going to see either people are not chatting with it at all because the value prop doesn't meet a need of theirs, or once they do come in, if you're not quickly delivering on that value prop and you're asking too much before you give value back to the user, or if they don't understand why you're asking them questions or why you're collecting data, then you see drop off very quickly.
Let's talk about that a bit more. So when you talk about bots that aren't working well, and you mentioned, you know, just asking too many questions, why would that be the case?
Let's say you're doing a diagnostic quiz. If you're asking a bunch of questions and then all of a sudden, if you too quickly ask something like their age, that's a very personal question. If you don't establish why you're asking for that information, you may know that as a function of their age, it's going to drive perhaps the next piece of content they see or the next choices that they're given. But the user might just see that and be like, oh, why are you asking me that? Where is this data going? So one of the principles is you explain why you're asking for sensitive information. But it's odd. There's a flip side to it. And I think the underlying thing that I'm trying to emphasize here is having empathy for the user, because I don't want people to conclude that asking people lots of questions is a negative pattern. It actually, when we've done user research, we've had, you know, 5 or 6 question quizzes, and we've had users the majority of users said, I would have wanted to answer more questions in order to get a better result.
Oh, interesting. And now we get back to then kind of what the users are looking for, which is a specific set of outcomes on this interaction. And if you can match that to the business goals, then you're going to have a successful and a winning bot for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about reach. What channels do you think we need to be on, someone needs to be on?
So that depends entirely on the use case, on the users and where they are. You know, there's a bunch of options. So there's web chat that's embedded inside your website.
Which I've used a lot, more than I thought I would. I don't love it, but I've been using it.
Yeah. What are the main things you've used it for?
Let's see. One was some shopping. I was actually getting, and I wanted technical information about about electric cars and chargers. And it was a challenge because once I'm down the path of technical questions, I felt like the person or the thing I was interacting with was much more sales oriented, very basic features and functions. And they weren't prepared to answer 240 volts versus 208 volt chargers or whatever the stuff I've been agonizing with lately.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point because, you know, when you look at data on e-com conversion performance versus in-store, that's one area where in-store has digital beat hands down is the ability to go and answer those long tail questions. I think the nice thing about whether it's over web chat or whether you're delivering it over Messenger or another channel, that has to do with the back end and the database of questions that the experience can draw on, whether it's a human going to look it up or an automated knowledge base. You know, that's where it's going. Over time, the more people ask questions, if you've got access to that information, then that's where consumers are asking for it. It's when they're in the shopping process.
And I absolutely love that you just use the term long tail for questions. I often only think about long tail in terms of products and books, but long tail questions are right. And I think it makes me think about, and I think it was Best Buy when they were having their challenges. You know, they wanted people to come into the store, but they had high school kids behind the register or working, and that they didn't have any knowledge, and they realized the only way they're going to differentiate themselves was to really provide value when these people walk in the door. And I'm now putting two and two together. They addressed the long tail, and they probably, if they were selling electric chargers, probably could have helped me figure this out. So that's the web chat piece, kind of on the web. And that was my experience. But I think it's more in terms of, let's talk a little more about kind of these different types of channels that companies might select.
Yeah. And web chat is nice because you're reaching users in context when they're in the moment. One of the issues with it is, as everyone who's used a web chat knows, it's synchronous. So if you close that browser tab, you lose it. There's no persistent history of it. It's also pretty anonymous, but it's nice because as a user, you have nothing to install. It's there ready to help you.
So when you and I were playing on these bots in the beginning to get for us to figure all this stuff out, yeah, there I was downloading junk. It was not trivial. It was too much work already just for me to get set up. So yes.
Whereas if you're on a site and the little button is in the corner, you're all set. So in-app is another place that we're seeing companies adding messaging. And it's really useful for use cases that involve sensitive data because you're running it over your own pipes, essentially. So it gives you greater security, greater control of privacy. It also gives you ability to control the experience. You can develop whatever custom widgets you'd like for form filling, et cetera. And it also gives you push notifications if the user allows you to. But it only works when users have a data or Wi-Fi connection. You've got to be thinking through all the various operating systems and mobile devices that are out there. And you've got to also cultivate your own audience and promote your app yourself to get users to download it, which increasingly is becoming a more and more difficult proposition for users.
Interesting. Now, if I was I have a lot of the apps I think about, if I do a lot of finance apps, I have my banking apps and I can take pictures of my checks and deposit them. They've yet to put chatting out there, but that would be a classic example of an in-app chat to know what I'm doing and how they can help me perhaps.
Exactly.
And then there are these traditional routes. What I got? SMS, I got.
Yeah, you got SMS. SMS is, you know, might seem a little bit out of date compared to more modern messaging clients, but it has a few key advantages. It's got amazing global reach. It does qualify as a push notification. Again, there's nothing for the user to install. And it also does not require a data connection, which is SMS is the only channel that doesn't require data.
So it's more universally accessible.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
But it is more limited. The amount of text you have to work with is limited. It's only text. You often don't get accurate stats on delivery or read rates.
Interesting.
And you need the user's phone number. And in some jurisdictions, you need their permission.
Wow. So, okay. Yeah. That's a challenge and an opportunity. And messaging, I guess that's the up and comers.
That's where we're seeing worldwide. We're seeing massive user adoption of those channels, as well as just the amount of flexibility that you have over the messaging clients. And they also have broad global reach. They support way more than the text that you get over SMS. You can do full interactive experiences with images, with videos, with sound. You have carousels and clickable buttons. You also get a persistent thread. So it really does help you build a relationship over time. If you think about email, it's organized by topics and by threads. And in messaging clients, it's organized by people. So, you know, helps you sustain the interaction over time. You also get a lot more rich analytics. You can build these multi-turn, very deep interactions and then see where you can tune it and see what's performing well, what needs to be improved. But again, it requires a data connection. It requires some research to determine which messaging platform is right for your use case. And again, you have to make sure that the target demographic that you want to chat with is actually using that platform.
Right. So let's talk about that a bit more, especially when you mentioned in-app, and the challenge, of course, was getting someone to run the app. And now we're talking about the vast options someone might have within a messaging platform. So it sounds like I hear you about data connections, but my assumption is over time data will become more and more ubiquitous and we'll be fine on that front. But I guess the challenge, and it's the challenge we had with me playing with some of these bots with you as we started the podcast, is user acquisition. So how does someone go about helping users find whatever means of interactions available to them? Sounds like it may be the biggest challenge.
Well, right now it's a challenge for certain use cases. And so the first question you want to ask is, do you have an audience already that you're wanting to deepen your relationship with or migrate them over to this channel to offer them something unique? Or are you starting something new and you're needing to attract a new user base to this experience? And so the approach you take is going to be different. If you've got an audience already in play, for example, if you have a email subscribers that you want to offer something more interactive to, then if you're using something like Messenger, you can actually email a link or publish it or on social, on your website. You can add parameters to the link, which lets you do two things. It lets you track traffic into it, but it also lets you give them a customized landing point when they get into the bot.
I can already tell how much richer that is compared to if you want to subscribe to something, text subscribe to phone number 7214, whatever. Still that's out there on the SMS front to say but it's generic. Mm-hmm. It's not specific. And what you're saying is now we've got the ability to really be much more focused when they come in. So now you know that much more about them the day they show up.
Yeah. Yeah. In theory, you could give people a different code word to text you over SMS. I imagine it would work similarly, but you know, every variation, you've got the risk of people mistyping it. And you're also asking them to type something, which is quite a bit of friction these days.
Right. And I'm hearing that more on the generic podcasts that are saying, if you'd like to text this to so-and-so to make a donation or text this to subscribe to our newsletter. So they won't be able to get that fine grained because of the nature of the mass distribution of that particular medium. So, I think we've got an idea of how to build a bot, things we're going to focus on, what matters from a user's needs perspective, aligning with business, not doing sort of the wrong things. But at the end of the day, how can we best tell if a bot is kind of working the way it should? What's your view of success metrics?
Right. So I do strongly advocate that anyone who's endeavoring to build a bot start with the metrics early on. You define what success looks like for you as a business. Then you also frame metrics that reflect on whether the user is achieving success too for their goals. And so in the bots that I've worked on in the past 2 years, the metrics that I'm looking at, and in some cases, they're very similar to metrics that you'd use for other, you know, for web and apps and social, but they fall into three main categories. I'm usually looking at the class of metrics around usage and engagement. And I'll explain what this looks like for bots. There's also conversion metrics that relate back to the business goals. And then there's satisfaction metrics that reflect the user's goals. And for usage and engagement, you're usually looking at things like average total conversations, total messages, average conversation duration, the average number of turns per conversation, and what the threshold for success looks like depends very much on the shape of the interaction that you're building.
And it's not necessarily the case to
progress to a transaction.
No, not at all.
That's the key here that I think I have. I think a lot of the people, a lot of folks kind of think about the mindset of a classic marketing funnel. And we're moving them down the funnel. I don't have to. I have a bot and I want to build a relationship and do more things with that person because later it will yield value. So it's interesting how you're describing that to me. I like that.
Yeah. And to add to that, there's always going to be conversion metrics. A conversion doesn't have to mean a transaction. For some of the projects I've worked on, conversion included having the user fill in a rich profile. That's a conversion action. We successfully got the user to do that. And as a result, it actually unlocks greater value to the user, but it also obviously unlocks great value to the business as well. So you frame that conversion. You might have lots of micro conversions throughout the dialogue. And then on the user side, we call them satisfaction metrics, but it goes deeper than that. I mean, we go all the way to collecting actual NPS in the bot. Sometimes we're looking for a thumbs up, thumbs down. We're asking for comments and we do all kinds of processing on that. But, engagement itself is a proxy for satisfaction. If you get people through a flow and they got something that they wanted, then, there's implicit satisfaction and then explicit as well.
So I think I'm going to look at the next bot I interact with a very different set of eyes than I did today. I'm going to try to be less critical, although maybe because of what I heard from you, I might even be more critical at times, but I'm going to appreciate and respect, I think, the journey that they're taking me on down this path. Amanda Robinson, thank you so much for some really cool insights on what it takes to kind of do this right. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.